Manjeet did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, healthcare training places sit empty while qualified people work double shifts to cover staffing gaps they could help fill. The gap between need and provision widens every day, not because the resources don't exist, but because someone in Westminster decided connecting them wasn't worth the spend.
I grew up watching my parents serve our community from behind the counter of their corner shop in Deepdale. Every morning before school, I'd help stack the shelves and listen to the regulars share their stories. Mrs. Ahmed, with her arthritis, Mr. Wilson recovering from his stroke, young mums juggling work and poorly children. I saw how much difference a bit of care could make, how people lit up when someone actually listened. During sixth form, I started volunteering at Ashworth House Care Home. I loved the work immediately, helping residents with meals, sitting with them during difficult afternoons, learning their names and their histories. One resident, Dorothy, had been a seamstress during the war. She taught me to darn socks while telling me about the planes flying overhead during the Blitz. Another, Frank, had worked the docks in Liverpool for 40 years. His hands were gnarled from the labour, but gentle when he showed me photos of his grandchildren. I knew then that nursing was what I wanted to do with my life. I took a detour through psychology at UC Lan first, partly because my parents worried about the physical demands of nursing, partly because I was curious about how the mind worked. But every placement, every lecture, brought me back to the same conclusion. I wanted to be hands-on with patient care. I wanted to be the person families trusted with their most vulnerable moments. In 2022, after graduating with my psychology degree, I applied to Health Education England Northwest for nursing training. I was confident. I had the academic background, the care experience, glowing references from the home. When I called for an update on my application, the administrator sounded genuinely apologetic. There are only 180 funded places for 400 qualified applicants across Lancashire, she told me. The competition is incredibly fierce this year. I was disappointed, but not deterred. I took a job as a healthcare assistant at Royal Preston Hospital, thinking the experience would strengthen my next application. The work was everything I'd hoped. Challenging, meaningful, exhausting in the best way. But every shift showed me how desperately we needed more qualified nurses. We were constantly short-staffed. Patients waited longer for medications, for comfort, for the basic dignity of timely care. In 2023, I applied again. This time, the conversation was different. I'm afraid funding has been cut further this year, the same administrator explained. Treasury spending constraints mean we've had to reduce our training allocations. We simply don't have the budget allocation from Westminster. I accepted this at first. It sounded reasonable, regrettable, but logical. Budgets were tight everywhere. People needed to make difficult choices. I started a part-time access course anyway, paying the fees myself, determined to strengthen my application for the following year. That's when I discovered something that made no sense. A friend from my psychology degree was working as a cleaner at UC Lan's nursing school. In January 2024, she mentioned how quiet the building was. Half the simulation labs are closed 3 days a week, she said. There are lecturers sitting in empty classrooms, equipment covered in dust sheets. Apparently, they had 50 empty places this term. Empty places. Lecturers with no students to teach. Equipment purchased, but unused. I walked past the nursing school the next day during my lunch break from the hospital. Through the windows, I could see sophisticated mannequins designed for training, exactly the kind of technology that would have prepared me for the complex cases I was assisting with on the wards. They sat silent under protective covers. I started asking around my old psychology cohort. Sarah wanted to retrain as a mental health nurse after working in a call center since graduation. James was interested in pediatric nursing after volunteering with his nephew's disability support group, Both had applied for training places. Both had been told the same thing. There is no funding. The contradiction was right there in front of me. The people existed, qualified, motivated, desperate to train. The facilities existed, purpose-built, equipped, staffed with lecturers who wanted to teach. The need existed. I saw it every shift as we struggled to provide the care our patients deserved. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I applied again in 2024, hoping the situation had improved. The response was identical. We simply don't have the budget allocation from Westminster. But now I heard it differently. The government that prints every pound note in my wallet, that decides how many pounds exist in the economy, was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to train the people who were standing ready to work. I started to understand that the excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. When I was growing up, if my parents said we couldn't afford something for the shop, that was a real constraint. They had to earn each pound before they could spend it. But the government doesn't work like a household. It issues the currency. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed. They did. Whether the skills could be taught. They could, in the empty classrooms I'd seen. Whether the materials were available. They were, sitting under dust sheets. Whether the country needed more nurses. Every understaffed ward answered that. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. Someone in Westminster looked at the idle training capacity, the qualified applicants, the staffing crisis on our wards, and chose scarcity over investment. I'm still working double shifts as a healthcare assistant. Storm still gets her morning walk along the Ribble before I head to the hospital. But I watch everything differently now. When I see empty training places and unemployed graduates existing side by side, I don't accept that this is just how things are. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What happened to me isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. Someone just chose to keep it locked.
What Manjeet experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing unnamed authorities to make political choices sound like economic facts. Think of how tobacco companies once cited scientists say to dismiss health risks without naming which scientists or revealing their funding sources. The phrase carried weight because it sounded authoritative, even when the actual scientific consensus pointed the opposite direction. In Manjeet's story, every rejection cited economists without naming them. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. This fake expertise maintained the false analogy at the heart of every funding cut, that government budgets work like household budgets. Every time someone said there is no money, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. A household must earn before it spends. A government that issues its own currency spends first, then collects taxes to manage inflation and demand. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Preston, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Preston ranks 35 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation Decile 1. The constituency has 3,193 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. 360 giving Grant NAV records total grants received of £200.4 million. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.